I think of you as a man who likes to focus on something. I remember it was Mozart, then it was Bach, and yes. Schumann. And it, yes. to get a chance to hear you in recital playing multiple composers, many of whom we've heard your recordings and sometimes not, it's just a great treat. How do you go about setting out a performance like a we're going to hear in Scottsdale? Yeah.
Yeah, it's not easy for me, and usually I leave it to the last minute because I like to explore certain areas which I'm not sure I will be able to play in concert, and so I spend periods going from this piece to that piece, just trying to search out things. I'm very interested in the whys and why this note and not that note, and harmony and structure and counterpoint. All of those things interest me. So I go through a lot of music, and then eventually I decide I feel closer to this, I'd like to play this now or something. And that's how the program gets decided.
You open with Bach, and I'm wondering, all the years that you've played Bach, and we've admired your recordings, and are there always new things you're discovering in Bach?
Oh, always. And part of the fascination also lies in how to transfer this to the piano. Because the piano wasn't an instrument that Bach knew very well. I mean, he did play an early piano of, I think it's Cristofori, but it wasn't to his taste completely, because strangely enough, it wasn't loud enough, and the action was too heavy. So I think all of those things have been sorted out, but nevertheless, his music was played on the harpsichord or the clavichord, and you know, it's hard to play it on the piano. You have to make decisions that are very important. And for instance, how much dynamics to use and how to use them, not to either be too romantic or too dry or wooden. So it's very difficult to find the medium in Bach. And I'm always studying articulation, phrases, all of these things, and of course the determining thing is the voice leading, how it goes, how the voices go one to another.
For people who might be less familiar with the harpsichord than the piano, there's the big debate, is the piano a string instrument or a percussion instrument? The harpsichord was really a plucked instrument, so it didn't have the sustain without really holding the note open, right?
Well, but the dampers don't damp so well on the harpsichord, or that is, it. If you're close to a harpsichord, you hear a kind of glow, which is not always captured in recordings. And that kind of glow, which also, by the way, the organ has when you hear it in a church, it has a kind of reverberance. It's hard to get on the piano because it damps so immediately. So I try to get that with a slight pedal or overhanging the notes or something like that to give that impression.
Was there a particular reason you chose to open with the French Suite number 6?
Well, I love it very much. I've recently recorded the French suites. They're not out yet, but I did all of the suites. And I thought it's a very jolly, happy piece. And I thought that's a nice way to balance the program with, let's say, the Franck, which is more, not quite tragic, but it has tragic import, so to speak. There's a religious side to it, but it is a man in doubt about life and about certainly God and all of the big questions. So I wanted to balance, let's say, a certain part of the first half, like the Haydn and the Bach, which are basically jolly pieces. I mean, they do have their pathos. The slow movement of the Bach, the Sarabande, has a lot of pathos. And the slow movement of the Haydn is very profound. But they're very jolly pieces on the whole, so I thought that would balance with the Franck.
Well, since you brought up the Franck, it opens the second half of the concert, the recital.
Correct.
And this is a piece that you mentioned it in the context of Bach. It's almost a tribute to Bach, isn't it?
It is. You're absolutely right. Because even in the title, chorale, prelude, chorale, and fugue, the chorale and the fugue are the two areas where Bach laid the groundwork for everybody. And I think that is the essence of the piece, this dichotomy between the chorale, which I think is very reassuring and sanctified, with the dichotomy between the chorale and the fugue, which is not only more cerebral, but more doubting. More, the harmonies are more fluid. There's less certainty in it. There's, as I say, a lot of doubt. So I think these two aspects are the things that Franck is dealing with, belief and doubt.
You mentioned the Haydn being a jolly piece, and when I think of Haydn, correct me if I'm wrong, when I think of Haydn, I think of a man who was a great composer who played a lot of instruments but really wasn't a master of any of them, but he wrote these wonderful piano sonatas.
He did. I mean, one after another. They're not often played, but they are masterpieces. This one is certainly a masterpiece. It's not, you know, pianistic quite the way Mozart is, with all these runs and things, but it does have its share of virtuosity, and it's very witty. It's clever, but not in a slick way. It's very everything is connected, one note to the next, and he's using motives in a very novel and witty fashion. So there's always a bubbling wit about it.
With Haydn, we have here a man who was a teacher of Beethoven, the famous quote from Beethoven that, I studied with him, but I didn't learn anything, which sounds like he was, you would expect of Beethoven.
Yes, exactly. I think that's what Beethoven would say with anybody.
You're playing the piano sonata number 26, but I also noticed that maybe you're finished now, but you were working on editing the Beethoven sonatas.
Yes, that's quite right, for Henley. No, we're not finished. We're sort of in the middle, a little bit less than half finished. But yes, it's been for a few years, and this is fascinating. And part of the reason that I'm playing the Lesetia, besides that it works well in the program, and it's a very beautiful and rather moving piece because of the departure of the Archduke and what it meant to him. It's a personally moving piece. Is that I've just edited it and found a lot of interesting things in the manuscript, and also there was recently found it's dedicated to Archduke Rudolf. Well, in Archduke Rudolf's library is a copy made by Beethoven's copyists, and it's very good. And that has recently been found, and so that's a source of some interesting changes, let's say. Not big changes, but dynamic things.
Tell me about that, because we become accustomed to something, and very often we're not aware, because someone like you executes it so well that we probably wouldn't be. What kinds of things are you finding in this manuscript?
Well, for instance, I'm just trying to think, because I was just thinking, I don't know directly the manuscript, but for instance, the sketches, which we've looked at as well, has dynamics at the beginning of the second movement, which don't exist in the score. The dynamics being forte diminuendo, ti-da-da, ti-da-da. But the second time the theme comes, ti-da-da, he accents that note. It's a different note. That's not in any printed edition, and we will have that in our edition as a note. But there are points of phrasing, probably little details, no huge thing, but there are strewn throughout the piece. There are a lot of things that we found.
It's always fascinating when someone like you approaches, who's played Beethoven and played it so well and become acknowledged as that, to get to go through and then edit the piece to find these things from all these different sources.
That's right.
We know Beethoven to have been eccentric at least, and with all the ideas he had, sometimes fleshing through them wasn't his strong suit.
No, that's right. But he was very, he sketched a lot, and so he was very careful in the end. You don't imagine that from Beethoven, because there's something, as you say, eccentric, although that's not the word I would use, but very emotional and liable to emotional outbursts. Yet he was very careful. He made many, many sketches of a piece before he came out, so he thought a lot about it, and nothing is quite random in Beethoven, although it seems sometimes.
While I have you, not here, but there, I do want to ask, when a pianist plays Beethoven, we all feel we know Beethoven, but I don't know that anyone can become more intimate when it's the man's instrument. Very often he's writing for himself. In this case, he's writing a piece of love, out of love for someone.
Yes.
When you were younger, and now that you are a little older, Tell me about the Beethoven you've discovered in playing his music.
Well, you realize how profound the genius is. I mean, you sort of sense it all the way through. I sensed more than just a composer that was riveting. You feel someone that connects with the deepest aspects of human consciousness, the question of why are we here, you know, things about brotherhood, things about relationship to God, all of these kind of things, spiritual questions, heroic questions that everybody asks or everybody somehow thinks about, and he saw it very clearly, but he was able to express it in ways that were revolutionary, really. I mean, it sounds different than anything before it. So it had, I think, it still has a powerful message, a powerful punch to us. And I just realized more and more that, as I see it, the humanity, really.
Mm-hmm. And the concert closes with the Opus 20, Scherzo No. 1, Chopin.
Yes.
This is
almost a diabolic work. It's, again, it's that second part of the concert is not like the first half, and it's just hell. It's a view from hell. Why I'm playing it is not because I have that view, but I find it a very moving piece with the middle section, which is an old Christmas time folk song from Poland, contrasting, you know, so somehow you get the feeling of exile. You get the feeling that he's not in his country by choice, necessity. And, yeah, it's a very moving piece.
Thank you again for all the recordings, the performances, your
intellect,
your artistry. It's a great joy to share the planet with you, Murray Pariah.
Thank you so much. Thank you.